far out in the uncharted backwaters of the unfashionable end of the western spiral arm of the galaxy lies a small, unregarded yellow sun. Orbiting this at a distance of roughly 92 million miles is an utterly insignificant little blue-green planet whose ape-descended life forms are so amazingly primitive that two of them think doing a podcast called Digital Watches Are a Pretty Neat Idea is a pretty neat idea. They are Jeff and Brian. Hi there, this is Jeff. I'm with my friend Brian, and this is our Easter
bonus episode.
And nobody has to get nailed to anything.
Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Well, I'm doing great, Brian. How are you?
Well, frankly, I'm feeling a little peckish.
Peckish? Why are you feeling peckish?
Well, you know, I'm thinking that I'm kind of hungry, and I was thinking that in the next 10 minutes or so, we're going to have to believe at least six impossible things, so maybe we can find a good restaurant we can go to.
I know just the one. Yeah, six impossible things is correct. So what we're going to talk about today is what I will call the epilogue of quintessential phase.
Yes.
What happened to me is I'm listening to this last episode, and at the very end of episode three, they were talking about the next episode being the last and final episode ever. So that's right. What I expected, and that's how I'm listening to it.
Yep, me too.
I've not listened or read anything after this. So even though I know there's more stuff, I have no idea what it is. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think they planned on continuing the radio series after Douglas Adams's books.
Right.
So I'm not watching the time counter. And when the Earth is destroyed, I just figuring that's it. And I'm waiting for the credits.
Yep. And you look down and you saw, what, 11 12? And a half minutes to go.
Something like that, yes.
You're like, huh?
Yeah, something else started. And I'm like, what? And then I kept going, what? And then I kept going, what?
Well, yeah, it's amazing, you know. It's amazing,
right? So I don't think we're gonna try and figure out why they've done what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
We're just gonna let people know what they've done. So if they've only read the book and haven't listened to Quintessential Phase, and they think the story ended with the destruction of Earth, boy, they're gonna throw some theories out here that are quite interesting.
Right. Now, we do know, I mean, based on what you've given me as source material, that there is what they call the hexagonal phase, right?
Yes, and there's even one after that.
Oh, okay. So there's two more audio dramas, at least.
Correct.
That we're going to be listening to.
Yes.
Supposedly with the same story, but all after he passed, right?
Right. I'm imagining, and I don't know for sure, but I have to imagine that the next phase is going to be parallel with Owen Coffer's And Another Thing.
Right.
And then there's one after that I have no idea what it's based on at this point. I haven't looked for anything on that.
And we're going to cover And Another Thing, right, at some point in the future?
Yes. Yes, we are.
Okay. So this would be interesting because, like you say, I think you and I are both going into virgin territory. I mean, this basically, when we heard this quintessential phase, this last episode here, and we got to that final 11 minutes, that was new to us.
That was new.
Neither one of us had heard it before.
Correct.
Well, I'm sure people are eager to know what happened.
Yes. I'm sure they are. So the best I can describe what happened is that there's kind of in a fade in of a sound that I can only describe as a reboot or a rewind.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear the original guide talking about the entry for the Babelfish.
Yep.
And then they expanded the entry on the Babelfish.
Yes.
And apparently it has a tactic for self-preservation
mm-hmm.
that the dolphins have also adopted.
Right.
So the Babelfish was first. The dolphins adapted this ability later.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting because I know that we've had some discussion about dolphins and their yeah. ability to communicate.
Right.
But apparently they knew Babelfish before they knew humans.
Yes.
or at some point when yes. they knew humans. So they could have chosen to put a Babelfish in their ear.
Correct. Correct.
But they didn't.
So what this special new ability is that we've learned about the Babelfish is that it has what is called continuous probability transference in the picosecond before unavoidable destruction.
Right, right. And that's a key one there, unavoidable.
Yes, yes. So it said that the Babelfish also takes their hosts because they can't live without the hosts since they're feeding on mm-hmm. those brainwaves. So I guess mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Right.
There's a part coming up where they're talking and it almost sounds like it takes their hosts and those around them. Did you kind of get that?
Yeah, what it said is other cetaceans, so other dolphin-like creatures.
Okay, so it isn't other people.
Right, right, right.
Then that's going to bring up a really good question later on.
There's a number of them.
Right.
Right, because, I mean, just right at the surface, my first thought when I heard this was, well, this is kind of odd. Does that mean that someone with a Babelfish in their ear essentially becomes immortal?
That's what it would mean.
Well, it does, but I think the key here is unavoidable. Or avoidable, or you know, the phrase that they use there to when the Babelfish activates his self-preservation. The only thing I could think of is the destruction of the Earth was like a total annihilation of space. So that's going to be different than a person just dying, where a fish could crawl out of your ear and, you know, do whatever it's going to do, you know?
I'm going to imagine that the Babelfish does not willingly go into anybody's ear. A person puts it in their ear. And I'm going to imagine if the person dies, the Babelfish can't just leave and go into somebody else's ear. It's going to just die. It lives on the brain waves from its host. And when the brain waves of its host die...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they take it out. I mean, he's taken it out. He took it out on primitive Earth, and he took it
right.
out in the movie. So
yes.
they can't come out.
Of course they can, but where would it go?
I don't know.
It would just be lying on the ground, and everybody around it most likely would have a Babelfish already and wouldn't right. need another one.
Well, just because you're not needed doesn't mean you're not wanted.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, you're so cruel. You're such a mean person.
Yeah, you can't care about everything.
You can't care about every damn thing.
So this continuous probability transference basically means that they flick into existence in any alternative reality. And then they say it leads for Arthur to several probabilities.
Right.
It didn't say that there were many probabilities for anybody else. It just said no. for Arthur.
Correct.
Which I don't understand.
No, no. You know what this made me think of? Made me understand even more why Prax might have thought that Arthur was quite an unusual individual. Since
yes.
in this incarnation and in this story, he now becomes three incarnations.
Yes. Yes, he does. And the first incarnation is picking up pretty much where secondary phase left off.
Mm-hmm.
And this has nothing to do with any of the books.
Right.
He's on the Heart of Gold with Lintilla mm-hmm. and a few of her clones. And they're there because they abandoned Zaphod and Zarniwoop on right. the asteroid with the man right. who rules the universe.
Right. Correct.
So they've just got the Heart of Gold, and Marvin's there, and they're just gallivanting around the universe, washing each other's backs.
That's right. That's right. And he has no problem remembering Eddie, the ship's computer.
No, he says Eddie a number of times.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's one. And we'll go through the three of them, and then we can talk about each one a little bit in their issues.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's funny. He's in the shower, you know.
Yes. So the second one that they talk about is that all of a sudden he's lying in front of a bulldozer.
Mm-hmm.
And Fenchurch is there too. So right. apparently they're a couple living in the same house.
Right.
All of the Earths on the probability axis have been destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
They can go anywhere else they want in any of the other probabilities, but they cannot go back to Earth because it doesn't exist.
Well, see.
Or it that would mean that the Guide version 2 Pro failed in its mission.
Yes. Yes. And I was a little bit confused about that particular situation because I'm not really sure how clear it is in the audio version that all of the potential Earths collapse. But on the other side, that even barring that, it didn't really matter because what they actually say here in this particular incarnation is that they go back in time.
Oh, do they?
Yes. And then they're on the Earth in front of the bulldozer.
Oh, so this is a back in time.
To a different Earth with a different potential history. But as you say,
still, it's not going to last very long.
Right. It's still going to get blown up.
It's going to be wiped from existence.
I don't know whether it'll be blown up, but it'll be blown up when the Grebulons blow it up.
Yes.
Which
they got a couple years.
Theoretically is 10 years or so. I mean, well, it depends on which Trisha timeline you're into.
Right.
Trisha's timeline as a reporter in space is, she said, what, 10 years?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and we don't really know. Is it like 7 years or something? Do you remember what they said in Quintessential about Trisha's timeline there? How long it was before the party or since the party?
I don't remember that. Okay. But 10 years is a nice round number.
Yeah.
But they've only got 10 years.
Right.
But that whole back in time thing with Fenchurch
mm-hmm.
bothers me because there was a reason and a method of how he met Fenchurch.
Right.
And he met Fenchurch because she was going to and from a mental hospital after dealing with the destruction of Earth that really wasn't the destruction of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So how did they cross paths and how did they feel they have this immediate connection when everything that gave them the connection never happened?
Yep. It's a good question. But again, if you've ever watched Hallmark, you don't have to ask those kind of questions.
No.
It just happened naturally.
And why couldn't he have gone to the planning office in this reality?
Right, right.
He's still lying in front of a bulldozer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the only reason that resolved is because Ford took him away because the Earth was being destroyed.
Right.
So if the Earth isn't being destroyed, how is the bulldozer debacle going to be resolved? So there's just...
Uh-huh. Well,
they
you
made
know,
it and sound like it was a happy part for him because he's with Fenchurch.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess it's, you know, with when you're dealing with Infinity, it's not impossible, you know, so... It's just one of these things. The other thing that I think is kind of funny is there at the epilogue, at the very end of the epilogue, the announcer, the narrator, brings up the fact that those Vogon ships that you see in space there, they're really just an hallucination. So don't worry about them.
That's right. Yes.
So is this another Earth where they will be convinced it's a hallucination and they don't really get destroyed? How many Earths are there that didn't get destroyed, right?
Canon says they were all destroyed.
Right, after the Grebulons, 10 years later. And you never know, maybe Arthur could get off that Earth with Fenchurch. Maybe there's another Chesterfield out there somewhere.
Yes, yes. In their front room.
Mm-hmm, there you go.
They're going to sit on it one day and watch television and gone. On Planet Cricket.
Right.
Listening to the song.
Mm-hmm. Well, presumably they've got another fish in their ear, so, you know, maybe the babel fish will bounce them out again.
That could be.
That's what's, you know, it's so ridiculous. But like you say, it's a nice, tidy little bow, isn't it?
It is a nice, tidy little bow. And then there's the third option, and mm-hmm. it was said to be the best one that fits the babel fishes and their hosts.
Right.
It seems that the restaurant at the end of the universe is like some sort of meeting hub because the whole group went there. Right. Everybody's there.
Mm-hmm.
Even Zaphod, who wasn't part of the explosion,
exactly,
happens to be there too.
Now, how did Zaphod get there? In this version, the audio version, he was in the artificial universe the last time we saw him inside the accounting department at the Hitchhiker's Guide, and now he's at the restaurant at the end of the universe.
Right. But, again, this is another reality that he probably was not in the office computer's reality. Mm-hmm. So these are all different probabilities.
Right, right. Because here at the restaurant, is the Heart of Gold is actually there also.
Yes.
Arthur's on the Heart of Gold with all the Lintillas, and the Heart of Gold is parked at the restaurant at the end of the universe.
And one of the things that they did not mention the first time we went to the restaurant, because he hadn't invented it yet, but it's powered by Bistromathics.
Mm. Okay. Well, yes, the restaurant. Yes, yes, yes. Yes, they did say that in the audio book. Interesting.
All right, so those are the three different Arthur probabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Either he just continues on with Lintilla and her clones taking showers together in the Heart of Gold. He's lying in front of a bulldozer with Fenchurch as his companion. However, he's only got 10 years. And he meets up with his buddies at the restaurant at the end of the universe. Was Lintilla there?
No, they didn't mention Lintilla at the restaurant.
Was Fenchurch there?
Fenchurch was there.
So Fenchurch was at the
restaurant.
At the restaurant. And we'll guess that's because in her flyings when she was lost in hyperspace, she had a babel fish.
She did.
So she would have popped to the restaurant with everybody else.
Well, she actually, I mean, what they imply there is that she's been there for quite some time. She's actually working there.
Yes, yes. She thought that they might show up, so she went there. And Marvin is there, too.
Right, right.
Still parking cars.
But he's the new and improved Marvin because he was still under warranty when he died.
Right, and he's been promoted and he has his own bucket now.
Oh, nothing happier than a man with a bucket.
So just the one thing I kept thinking about is one Fenchurch versus many Lintillas. Which would you have said was the better option for Arthur?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not going to touch that one with a 10-foot pole.
All right. I wouldn't either.
Oh.
So then Arthur asks a most confusing question. Mm-hmm. He asks Ford why the babel fish never saved their lives before.
Right.
And I'm like, you haven't died before.
And that's what Ford says. Yep.
Yes. So how can you, being alive and never having died, ask, how come it never saved our lives before? So I guess that's the unavoidable. Yes, he's been in danger. He was out in space for 29 seconds, almost asphyxiated. Didn't have a babelfish yet. Oh, yeah, he did.
Yeah,
yes, he did because that was on the Vogon ship. So he did have the babelfish, but the babelfish knew they're going to be rescued by the Heart of Gold. So he asked why they've never been saved, having never died.
Definitely he is confused, but that's Arthur's nature, right?
Yes. Oh, here is something. And I guess you said it was the cetaceans, because I have Ford gives credit to being in a plural zone.
Yes.
And in a plural zone, all life forms in the vicinity of a babelfish make the jump too.
Okay. Right. He said, I mean, they do say specifically cetaceans in, I think, in the guide description. So maybe Ford expanded it when he said it, you know.
Okay. Because that there's a big difference there. Because I'm like, are all of these humans suddenly going to find themselves on strange new worlds? With no babelfish? Or any idea what's going on?
In the beginning, when the guide is speaking, it mentions that this function of the babelfish and its ability to transfer living creatures includes cetaceans.
Okay. But in the restaurant, when Ford was explaining it to Arthur, he told Arthur that because he was in a plural zone, it transfers all organic life forms.
Interesting.
It could be more than just him. It could be
plants and animals,
the whole Earth popping up population.
Well, yeah, except that it's supposedly a limited parameter. You know, there's a limitation in space.
I'm sure. Yes.
Okay. Okay. So while the group is at the restaurant at the end of the universe, they mention, of course, that the dolphins have this same functionality, that they can transfer themselves at will. And Ford and Trillian mention that if they take a look outside, you'll see hundreds of pools of water where dolphins are playing.
Yes, yes. So there was outside, there was a dolphin room where they could survive and watch the end of the universe.
Right, right.
Trisha and Trillian were both at the restaurant, and the group watched them merge. So they became one person.
Right.
And it seemed to retain the personality of Trillian, but kept the blonde hair of Trisha.
Which Ford, of course, liked.
Yes. Oh, another thing about Marvin. He called up because Zaphod had ordered a babe wash for his ship.
Right.
But due to staffing shortages, Marvin was going to be his babe. And that's where you learn he has his own bucket so he can wash the ships.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, and of course, they couldn't help themselves. What table were they at the restaurant?
They were at table 42.
Yes, of
and
course they were.
And our friend Thor sends over some champagne to Trillian.
Right, right. So she has a happy ending.
Or he does, depending on how you look at it.
That's right. So Ford said that she could argue astrophysics with Einstein, but a set of biceps and a big hammer can instantly reduce her IQ to single numbers.
Oh my gosh. And of course, Random is there.
Right.
And she is arguing with the dish of the day.
Yes, she wants the veggie option.
Right. And they then Ford says, is it Zaphod who says, can you bring her a talking cauliflower?
Something like that. Yes. Yes. And of course, since they're at the restaurant, the great prophet Zarquan has to make an appearance.
Mm-hmm. This time he doesn't show up with a few seconds left. He's actually a little early.
Yeah, yeah. And somebody else shows up. Who else showed up at the restaurant?
Wow Bagger, right?
Yes, Wow Bagger.
The infinitely prolonged.
Zarquan is the last one on his alphabet. It's a Z-A. I'm having difficulty figuring out why he's the last one on his list, but I guess I kind of get the joke, but he's not the last one. Unless Zarquan is actually spelled with two Z's.
Well, it's possible that it's spelled with two Z's, and Zarquan could be his last name, so it could be Zebulon Zedifus Zarquan.
True. So anyway, Wowbagger is there to insult him.
Mm-hmm.
Did you write down the insult?
I did not.
You are a tersome, gobble-eyed pillock. So Zarquan calls Wowbagger a winding sack of parrot droppings and takes away his immortality.
That's right.
And he dies.
Yes.
So just like Arthur, knowing he can't die until after he's been to Stavromula Beta, dies immediately after discovering he's on Stavromula Beta, Zarquan only had his immortality taken away. He wasn't sentenced to death.
Right.
But he died immediately, and the crowd applauded. Well, every one of them had to have been insulted at one point or another.
Yeah, absolutely. They were all glad to see Wowbagger go.
So why do you think Adams left out the part where Wowbagger insulted all of our main characters?
Don't know. I couldn't come up with enough insults.
You know, Zaphod should have been insulted.
Yeah.
You know, Ford, he should have. Trillian, Tricia McMillan, they all should have been insulted at one point or another, but we didn't get to see those. He left that out.
Nope. Too much Forrest Gump.
That's right. And then what for me was really bad is at the end of this, the MC, Max Quadruplane, leads them all in a moving rendition of Auld Lang Syne.
Tradition.
And then the credits.
Right.
So we get to hear the credits. And then after the credits.
Right.
Prosthetic Vogon Jeltz blows up all the Earths. And puts a tick in the box.
Right.
Which means that 10 years was up for Arthur. And then he's going to go for some shore leave on Eroticon 6.
Right.
And spend some time with Eccentrica Golumbitz. Before they blow up her planet. Like, wait.
They don't do anything without all the official word, you know, with the. Yeah, that was just a little ridiculous.
Yes. So Arthur asks Fenchurch if she will go flying with him when she gets off work.
Right.
And she says, always.
True love. Don't you feel, I mean, after watching this, didn't you feel like you just enjoyed a Hallmark movie?
Yes. Well, this ending reminded me of the last book that I read in the Sword of Truth series by Terry Goodkind.
Oh my gosh. Which one was the last one that you read?
The last one was the 11th book called Confessor.
Okay.
And it was promoted as the end of the series.
Mm-hmm.
However, he wrote 5 more books after that.
Right. And trust me, you didn't need to read them.
No, and haven't, and I'm not looking for them. But I'm sad to say that I learned that he apparently died in mid-September of 2020.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, so in the whole COVID pandemic thing, we lost Terry Goodkind. They didn't say his manner of death, but just that he was 72 years old and died in mid-September of 2020.
Right. Yeah, that's really interesting because we could have a whole nother show about Terry Goodkind.
Yes. Whole nother podcast.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's funny, but the one thing that he, well, you and I have had a lot of conversations about horror and science fiction and all the different tropes and what we like and what we don't like. But one thing that I've never been a huge fan of is zombie movies, you know.
Right.
I mean, they're entertaining. They're okay. But the whole zombie thing is just done to death. And that's where he takes that whole series after that. And it just falls apart in my mind.
Oh, he jumped on that bandwagon of zombies?
It's all zombies, you know. I mean, they have a different name, but that's all they were, you know, bunch of zombies.
Well, anyway, in the book Confessor,
mm-hmm.
it totally wrapped up the previous 10 books in the series mm-hmm. with a big bow and happy faces and mm-hmm. seemingly a cameo appearance of every favorite character you encountered in the previous books.
Right, right.
And that's what this epilogue was.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great big happy bow wrapping it all up. And everybody's fine and everybody's happy.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because obviously since we know that the hexagonal phase exists, and then what's the one after that called?
I'm not kidding. It is called Apocryphal.
Apocryphal. Yes. Okay, that makes sense. So I wonder where, I mean, obviously they have to have some place to base their whole story.
Yeah.
So we assume that hexagonal phase starts at the restaurant at the end of the universe. Goes from there, huh?
I don't know. Like I said, I have not read Owen Colfer's And Another Thing, so we will find out.
Yeah, I guess we got a couple months before we're getting there, huh?
Yes, yes.
So what's next on the agenda, Jeff?
I think that I would like to go through and do the graphic novels. Wow. So the first three books have been converted into graphic novels,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to try to utilize our YouTube feed and put still pictures of the pages we're talking about.
Excellent.
Similar to what we did with the illustrated version of the book.
Right, right.
That was our experiment. Now we have a better handle on how to do this.
I think so. I really do think that was, it was funny what we felt like after we completed recording that. But after reviewing it and comparing it with the other episodes, I think it was pretty helpful. I thought there was a lot of good information in there. And now we do have, like you say, a handle on how we can approach these graphic images.
That's right.
And bring them to the radio.
Yeah. Is this your NPR audition?
Yeah, exactly. Tonight on NPR.
Digital watches are a pretty neat idea.
By two knuckleheads.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm really looking forward to when we can review those graphic novels, but I think it's about time to say goodbye, Jeff. What do you think?
I think so. I need to go outside and look at the sky and see if there are any Vogon ships out there.
Yellow!
Because I don't have a babelfish. Thank you for listening to Digital Watches Are a Pretty Neat Idea. Look for us the first Thursday of every month for a full episode. We will also release a bonus episode later in the month. A very special thanks goes out to Luke, Max, Greg, and Tim Lesnick for arranging and performing our opening theme. We would also like to thank our talented friends and family for their voice work on our introductions and commercials. Visit our website at digitalwatchesareaprettyneatidea.buzzsprout.com, where you can find links to all my Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy-inspired t-shirt designs. You can find us on Facebook and YouTube as Digital Watches Are a Pretty Neat Idea, on Instagram as Watches Idea Podcast, and on Twitter at Watches Idea. If you'd like to contact us, our email is digitalwatchespodcast@gmail.com.
This has been a Fruits for Thought production.